President Obama appointed Dr. Tom Frieden to head the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in 2009. Following President Trump's inauguration 2 weeks ago, Frieden stepped down from the CDC, and he's joining us now to talk about his work. Tom Frieden, welcome back.
Great to be here.
So let's get the obvious question out of the way, which is where do you go next?
I'm weighing the options right now. What I've always done when deciding what to do next is ask the simple question, how can I do the most good? How can I save the most lives? And that's the question I'll be asking as I decide between the opportunities I'm looking at.
So that's actually has been an essential question every time you've headed an agency, because you went from some really innovative work in tuberculosis to be health commissioner for New York. And I wonder how you make those decisions. And this feeds into the CDC's campaign on winnable battles, right? How do you decide what is winnable? What are the sort of components that go into that?
I think of it kind of in a very logical way. You first ask the question, what's killing people or causing disability? Then you ask the question, of those causes, which of them are actually preventable? There's some that we can do a much better job preventing. There are others that we don't yet have the tools to prevent. And then when you have that list of those that are preventable, how do you go about doing it?
So, like an example of one we don't quite have the tools to prevent, car accidents, is that sort of in
there? Oh, actually, we know very well how to reduce motor vehicle fatalities. In fact, that was one of our winnable battles, and we came close to achieving our goal. What we did with winnable battles was to come up with a proactive agenda. Often in government, you're tempted to just deal with the inbox, see what happens, and respond day by day. And we had a pretty busy inbox between Ebola, MERS, Zika, pandemic influenza. But we had a really proactive approach, and that's why, because of the work of CDC, America is safer and healthier today than it was before. Take your example of motor vehicle crashes. There are things that can be done, for example, to reduce the risk that kids will get into crashes with graduated driver licenses. When I grew up, we didn't have those. You had a learner's permit for a while, then you started driving. Now, graduated driver licenses are very effective at reducing the risk. The risks when people start driving are massively higher than risks later in life. Second thing that can be done is reduce the risk of drunk driving. There's been a real understanding that drunk driving is something that is a peril to the public. You don't want your kid to get killed by someone who's intoxicated when he's or she's walking to school in the morning. And there are things that can be done to reduce drunk driving as a cause of motor vehicle crashes. And, of course, both the road construction approach and the vehicle safety approaches have made major impacts reducing motor vehicle fatalities.
So one of the criticisms of the winnable battles when the CDC released that was that it didn't include gun deaths. I want to read a question that the CNN posed, and they said, quote, why is the nation's leading public health official, a nonstop messaging machine, not talking about something that kills more than 30,000 people a year in the U.S.? That's more than the number of Americans who die of AIDS or colon cancer or prostate cancer, more than the number of people who died in the entire international Ebola outbreak. What's the answer to that?
Well, first, CDC does what Congress directs us to do. Congress is essentially the board of directors for CDC. Our budget is very specific and very structured. It's broken down into about 200 different lines, and we do not have freedom to decide what we do. We have freedom to decide how we're going to do it, but Congress determines what we work on. Realistically, we've asked in each of the past years for resources to study gun violence and figure out ways to reduce it as a health issue. And Congress said, no, we don't fund you to do that. However, what we have done is to work with states to expand something called the National Violent Death Reporting System that gives states the resources and technical input so that they can track every suicide and homicide in the state and understand what the causes were so they can try to prevent it. States have done that, and they've taken actions. For example, Oklahoma, when it looked at its data, saw that many of the homicides were among women who had previously had a domestic violence issue, and therefore they strengthened their approach to domestic violence. In Oregon, they found that there were many suicides among the elderly, so they strengthened suicide prevention measures among the elderly. There is no question that the U.S. is an outlier when it comes to gun deaths, both suicide and homicide. And I would hope that we could develop more information, but also implement the things that we know work to reduce the risk that there will be accidental or suicide or homicide from guns.
So you were just talking about states and also the relationship with Washington, and you'd mentioned to me that the CDC is the largest government agency that's not based in the larger D.C. area. What difference does that make? How does it either help or hurt the CDC to be separate, literally, from Washington?
CDC is the largest federal agency headquartered outside of the Washington, D.C. area. We're here in Georgia. That is our home. We have more than 10,000 staff and contractors working here, a payroll of over $1 billion. That leads to about $2 billion in industrial output here in Georgia. We bring in about 150,000 visitors a year to Georgia. We also spend about $1 million a day on purchases for things that we need to keep
CDC. $1 million a day?
To keep CDC running. And we partner for nearly $200 million a year with Georgia universities. So we have a big economic footprint in Georgia. But being in Georgia means two things. First, we are, I hope, a little insulated from some of the issues that
political
swirl
wrangling.
Around in Washington. However, we're also a little far from where budgets are decided. And that's why it's particularly important that people in Georgia, particularly the elected representatives here, make clear that investing in CDC is a best buy.
It sounds like you're talking straight to David Perdue and Johnny Isaacson.
Well, Senator Isaacson has been wonderful. He's come to CDC many times. He's traveled and seen what we do around the world. He really gets the fact that CDC is good for America. It saves lives, saves money. It's a best buy. Senator Perdue is newer. He's been to CDC, and we look forward to working with him. But also in the House, we need people really making clear that CDC is an investment. We protect America, and if we cut that, we make America less safe.
So you began sort of your high-profile career working with tuberculosis, and your fight against an epidemic of tuberculosis in NYC. People have studied that as a model of how to treat an epidemic, and this really interests me because there is so much personal human chaos involved in fighting disease. How do you efficiently organize a department to fight an epidemic? I mean, I guess that's what people study when they look at that as a model, right?
What I've always tried to do is come up with what I call a technical package, a limited number of interventions which, if done well, will result in a specific outcome. In New York City, we made sure to diagnose patients promptly, treat them completely, reduce the risk that they would spread the disease in hospitals, and track the outcomes of every patient. Underlying all of that was one single concept, accountability. We were accountable to the patients for making sure that they got cured. And we're able to do that in TB because you can get close to a 100% cure rate. But we found that patients were dropping out maybe because they were poorly treated, maybe because they had mental health problems, maybe because they had drug-resistant bacteria that weren't effectively treated. We put in a system to track every single patient in the city and ensure that they completed treatment. Some people objected to the fact that when people wouldn't take medicine, if nothing else would work, we would put them in a hospital till they were cured. But, you know, as we learn in high school, your right to swing your fist ends at my nose. And so we made sure that we were treating the patient as the VIP of the program. We reached out to homes, even sent people into crack dens to give people medication. But in the end, we very rapidly controlled it and did that through a combination of technical rigor in diagnosis and treatment and human contact, reaching out to patients and making sure that they got the care and treatment that they needed.
Now, you've mentioned one thing that sort of complicates your job in fighting disease, and that's privacy rights. Many people didn't want to be stuck in a hospital bed. But there are other things that complicate it. Then you get culture and society and even religion. And one of the winnable battles, for example, for the CDC was teen pregnancy. And there's all kinds of things that get involved in the battle with teen pregnancy. How does a scientist deal with all that, again, that chaos and mess that is inherently human?
We find that there's really an interplay between laws and regulations and programs and the cultural norms. Think of the things that have changed in the past few decades in this country, from would you like a cigarette, to be polite, to do you mind if I smoke, to not even asking, do you mind if I smoke, if you're in most people's houses. That's a cultural change that facilitated and was facilitated by things like smoke-free laws. Or think about drunk driving. It used to be common to say, would you like another drink for the road? Now it's friends don't let friends drink and drive. So that kind of cultural change is important. Teen pregnancy is at the lowest levels ever documented. And that's a combination of things. It is some delay in sexual onset of teenagers and a big increase in access to contraception.
We have about a minute left, and I wonder, what work do you leave behind? What did you not get to finish at the CDC?
Well, I think CDC can be encouraged by the progress we made in the past 8 years. America is safer and healthier because of the work we did. We have better prepared laboratories, more staff at more places, better tracking systems so we know where things are happening. We stopped threats in this country. We worked around the world so we have a tripwire and we'll understand when threats are arising elsewhere better than before. But there's still much more to be done. We still need to do better helping other countries detect problems there so we can stop them there and don't have to fight them here. We still don't have a rapid response fund so that the next time there's an emergency, we won't have to wait 9 months for Congress to act, but can nip a problem at the bud.
That's referring specifically like Ebola and Zika, where the CDC had that problem.
Zika in particular, but even with Ebola, when Congress acted quickly, we didn't have what are called emergency authorities. So we had to follow the usual government systems, which can take months when we need to take action hours. So a rapid response fund. And then there are health challenges like opiate overdose and antibiotic resistance, where we made a good start, but there's much more to be done. And we should never forget that the leading cause of death in this country is heart attacks and strokes. Most of them are preventable by doing simple things like controlling your blood pressure, not smoking, and getting regular physical activity like taking the stairs or walking.
Another doctor telling me to exercise. Dr. Tom Frieden, former director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, talking about his work at the CDC. Good luck with whatever you end up doing. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.